Boy, Popular the Man. It's Daphne J.
And Eric Anthony.
Episode 8, folks.
Episode 9.
9.
And where are we?
We are in the Cave of Solitude.
And how you doing, Daphne J? Excuse me. The little Yoda in me was coming out.
How are you, Daphne J?
I don't know what that was. I had something caught in my throat there. Oh, I'm feeling hot. What a way to start the show.
What a way.
How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good.
We're excited, folks.
Why are you excited? Tell the people.
We're going to talk again.
Somebody's very, very happy this afternoon. Did you have a special lunch or something like that?
I did.
Okay. What did you have to drink with that lunch? Like a case of beer?
A gin and tonic.
Oh, okay. I think, yeah, I may have made it a little bit too strong for that little body of yours.
It's okay. Take it away. What are we doing today?
Today, we are headed to the airport. It's exciting times.
Yes. Yes, we are.
You excited?
I'm excited.
Where are we going?
The best city in the world.
So Toronto? We live there already.
Boo. We're going to New York City.
Manhattan. What's special about Manhattan for you?
Everything about it. The lights. I feel like a superstar when I'm there.
You know
I feel
cool
like I'm
about,
home.
You know what's cool about New York City? For me, all the Marvel characters live there. Including the guy that we're talking about today.
Yes.
Who is?
Spider-Man.
And the book that we're discussing...
I'm blue.
No, don't sing that. That is the worst song to associate with this book because it's a really good book in my opinion.
But he's blue. It's Spider-Man Blue.
It is Spider-Man Blue.
I spit a little bit.
We're following our colored series of Daredevil Yellow, Spider-Man Blue, and eventually Grey Hulk, which would be our upcoming episode.
So stay tuned for that, folks.
Because Daphne J's made notes on that one. I was watching her the other day writing. I was like, what is she doing?
Because it was the one where I finished right away. And then as soon as I got home, I was able to recall all the things that I read. The other two, I had read them so far in advance. And I never got a chance to really break it down for myself.
Yeah. So you feel like you forget something that's happening.
Yeah. So hopefully I can be of some type of... I could do something today.
How do you remember this book? Do you remember it at all? It's been about a week or so since you've read it. So do you have a recollection or is it fading away now?
Some things stand out. I recall.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome.
But I'm excited for today.
Yeah.
Because you're right. We are going to be going to the city where,
city that never sleeps.
Yes. And the Matt Murdock was in Hell's Kitchen.
Yes.
He was from the Hell's Kitchen.
That's not where we're staying, though.
And then we're going... No. And then we're going to go... And didn't you tell me yesterday, was it, that there actually is an apartment?
Actually, the townhouse that Aunt May lives in, where Peter Parker grows up, it's an actual place you can go to in New York City.
Yeah. I
mean, he's never lived there, obviously, but...
Obviously.
The area is a real area.
Yeah, I think that would be cool.
Isn't that neat?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's one of the things... about the Marvel Universe that I feel really resonated with people in the 60s and what made it, what made a lot of kids growing up bigger fans of the Marvel Universe than DC because they lived in cities that were real. There was landmarks that were real and you felt, I don't know, I think there's more connection to it. Would you agree?
It was relatable, yeah.
Yeah, it's relatable. The school they go to, mm-hmm. all that kind of stuff is more in the real world, I guess you can say. I mean, obviously it's not the real world. Superheroes don't exist. But Metropolis, where would that really be? Mm-hmm. Gotham, the same. Like, they're all...
Well, they've always associated Gotham with New York City.
Right? Or Chicago.
Yeah.
Or what would Metropolis be? If Gotham's New York, wouldn't Metropolis be New York? Right? At some point in time,
not really. Because Metropolis was all bright and shiny. Maybe like a Washington? No. Philadelphia. No.
It's on the water, right? Because Metropolis is known to have
Lady Liberty. But Superman was from a real place. He was from Kansas.
He was from Kansas, but Smallville. It's just like a generalized place. So I don't mind those cities in the DCU, but I always liked that the Marvel characters, especially they were connected to New York City.
Right.
Well, that's awesome. Anything new and exciting you want to share? before we get into this book, last time we talked a little bit about the Suicide Squad movie and the casting about it.
Right.
Is there anything you got on your... this is what I want to bring up. I'm flying off a little bit off the handle here, but we did not address Philly P's email completely. No. Are we going to wait for Jay Siegel to come back? Because he's still sunbathing somewhere in the Caribbean. This is sickening.
Hate you.
So to all the listeners of the Cave of Solitude, if they're... anybody out there?
What do you mean? Everyone's listening to this fantastic show.
I hope you're right, and I believe they are.
And we have DC underscore comics news.
Yeah.
Did I say that right?
I don't think so.
DC underscore news comics.
DC comics underscore news, I think it is. And okay. P. Stammer listens to us.
Yes. I'm sorry for confusing your Instagram
name.
And
Little Sparrow listens to us,
but,
Philly P.
But we've
got
had
four,
some,
for
we've,
sure.
We've had some shout-outs, again,
yeah.
from people that do listen, and we really do appreciate that support, and
yeah.
we don't that doesn't go unnoticed.
And our friends that are in the that live in the Dominican Republic, they listen
yes.
to us too.
Yeah.
So shout outs to look, we got global fans. We're international.
We're everywhere.
Yeah.
Homie. Huh. Next.
So we never addressed Philly P's email.
Oh yeah, we were about
so
to
are we gonna wait for Jay Siegel to come back home and we'll do a little round table and have a little fun with that.
I think it'll be
top 11.
It's the fair thing to do.
Alright.
Because it was addressed to the Cave of Solitude email, which
okay.
is what?
Caveofsolitude@outlook.com. Yeah.
We did receive an email in regards to
Philly P.
Yeah, and what did he say? What did he want?
He wanted us to list our top 11 superhero squadron that would either be formed like a soccer team or with the formation of a soccer team to overcome an amazing cataclysmic battle.
Yeah, and I think everyone who was a part of the show
should weigh in on it.
And if Jay Siegel is still doing his thing, I think because he's a part of the team, we should wait for him. Just like the Justice League, they work as a team.
So we're like the Justice League.
I would say so.
Not the Avengers.
No.
No? You'd rather be the Justice League? If you were in the Justice League,
I'd be
you
Batman.
Be? No.
Why?
Because you're scared of the dark.
That's not true. I have nightlights everywhere.
Exactly.
I'm not afraid of the dark.
Do you remember when we were in Mexico on our honeymoon and you saw a bat? And you saw a bat.
You're only bringing that up because you just saw the video a couple of days ago and now you recall
but
that
you know
happened.
What? Bruce Wayne's scared of bats too. So
you know what? There you go.
There you go. But I didn't ever see Bruce Wayne in the movie or in the comic books duck down and go the way you did. So I don't know. I think you would be...
I had a moment of weakness, but then I overcame it.
So you're thinking you... But see, the cave is too cold for you. Like, we're in the Cave of Solitude. I'm doing the bunny ear quotations right now. But this is a warm room. If it was damp, like...
The window's open. It's pretty chilly in here, if you ask me.
Okay, I'll give you Batman. That's fine. Who would Jay Siegel be?
He'd be...
Jay Siegel would be Robin. That's who he wants to be.
He wants to be Nightwing, doesn't he?
No, he wants to be Tim Drake Robin.
Oh.
He's the one guy in the world who would not mind being the Robin to someone else's Batman.
Sad.
Why is that sad?
Because.
Why? But Robin's wicked.
Fine. Next, you.
We really have to.
See? And you always say, oh no, I like Batman and Superman the same.
Well, if you're Batman, I can't be Batman. So who's left for me? You want me
you
to be?
You can be the Green Martian.
I'm the...
Green Manhunter.
Martian Manhunter?
Yeah.
That guy is a glorified secretary. They never let him do anything but stay on...
But he's so BA, though. He could do so much.
Yeah, but then you smoke a cigarette in front of him and he crumbles.
Poor guy.
Yeah. So I'll take Superman, if that's all that's left. Because I'm definitely not as fast as the Flash and everything that I do.
No.
No.
Definitely not.
Definitely not.
Can we get to the blue?
No, I don't want to get to the blue. Well, I want to say Philly P., we haven't forgotten about your email.
We haven't forgotten, Philippi.
Philippi. So we will get to that if you are listening. Thank you for sending in your emails. Keep them coming, and we will address them. You recently saw, this weekend we had a little get-together. We watched a couple Marvel movies. Were they as good as you remembered them? We saw Guardians of the Galaxy again on Blu-ray.
I remember the first time when I watched it, I wasn't expecting much of it because I didn't know what it was all about.
Right.
I had very low expectations. And I loved it when I first saw it. Laughed at everything. I LOL'd for real.
LOL'd.
Yeah.
Okay.
This time around, I still laughed. Mm-hmm. But I think, too, I was doing a lot of things in between.
Yeah.
So I didn't really get a chance to sit down and actually enjoy it. But I bet if when I watch it again, I was just, my mind was in two places when we were watching that movie.
Yeah, you were all over the place. Mm-hmm. You know what? In our upcoming episodes, I think we should do something where we take a look back at some of the movies we liked from 2014 and get into things that shocked us, disappointed us, kind of like our best of for the year. Even if it's a book that we read that is maybe 10 years old, but something that happened in 2014, that'd be cool.
I concur.
And Guardians of the Galaxy is definitely some one of those things we should talk about.
Let's do it.
All right. So without further ado, let's get into our book this week, mm-hmm. Spider-Man Blue. Mm-hmm. Following up with Daredevil Yellow, initial thoughts. What did you think of this addition to the series? Tell me what you think of Spider-Man.
I think he's all right.
Think he's okay?
Yeah.
Do you like Spider-Man or Daredevil more as a character? What appeals to your sensibilities more?
I think I like Spider-Man.
Okay.
And I say Spider-Man.
Right.
Because I just find him entertaining when he's in the costume.
Yeah.
He has lots to say.
Yeah.
He's a smart aleck.
Yeah.
It was entertaining hearing him while he's battling his villains. He always has this just smart aleck.
Very witty.
Very witty, that's the word.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I thought that was entertaining.
So off the hop, you find you can get right into his world a little bit more and be a little bit more entertained based on the dialogue and the characteristics of Spider-Man Peter Parker.
Yeah.
Again, this book particularly, it's very vintage in its tone. It's going back to early, early issues of Spider-Man, like in the first introductions of characters who became extremely important in his life. Mary Jane, Gwen Stacy.
Mm-hmm. Because I haven't read, is this one of the few, like, how often is Gwen Stacy and Mary Jane in the same story? Is that done often?
Yeah, because they were all friends together back in the day. So, I know a lot about Spider-Man.
By the way, you have a nice haircut.
Oh, thank you very much. I went to Salon Daphne J today, and she did a very good job for me. What was I saying?
You're saying they were
Spider-Man.
Friends before.
Yes. So, Spider-Man, I've read a ton of Spider-Man, probably equivalent to how much Superman or Batman that I've read. And he's one of my top three characters. Sometimes when I go through certain spells, I enjoy him more than anything from DC.
Yeah.
And in the past year, I've collected a lot of vintage Spider-Man stuff. But I'm not 100% sure who... I think Mary Jane was introduced first in the comic books. But I don't know how much of a role she continued to play once Gwen Stacy came into his life. I think they were all just a group of friends.
Okay.
Yeah. And she dated, like in the book, Mary Jane dated Harry while Peter was dating Gwen, but there was always a flirtation with them.
Mm-hmm. Which I thought was stupid. She was so skanky.
Yeah.
This kind of reminded me like of a Betty and Veronica type thing.
Yes, very much so. Very much so.
And I never did the Archie comics, but I always knew there was a Betty and Veronica situation. I never liked Betty because she just seemed so posh and so into herself.
Well, that's Veronica.
Oh, Veronica?
The dark-haired one.
Okay.
Yeah, Betty's
yeah,
the blonde
she
hair.
Was all, you know, look at me, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
But the Betty was mm-hmm. always seemed like it was just very...
Girl next door.
And just very sweet in nature and just herself. Just very comfortable within her own skin rather than feeling
simple.
Like she had to compete with anybody else.
Yeah.
And the Mary Jane in this blue issue, I wanted to smack her every time. She was annoying to me.
Yeah. And she continued to be annoying. It's interesting you bring that up. She continued to be kind of like that flaky, floozy type of character.
Mm-hmm.
Life of the party girl, party animal that just kind of was shallow.
Yeah.
It seemed.
Yeah.
And they did a really interesting... She really comes out of... Her character develops a lot once Gwen dies in the comic books. And that's, I mean, that's not a spoiler for anybody. Whoever, if you read this book, you'll understand that Peter, similar to Daredevil, he's talking to a loved lost one.
Yes.
In this case, he's not writing it down. He's recording it mm-hmm. on a tape recorder. He's doing his own podcast to that person. So entering this world that is very vintage and nostalgic again in Spider-Man's universe, what did you think of it? What did you think of the character designs, the way Tim Sale's art is still, you know, it's going to still be his style. Mm-hmm. But what did you notice any differences between Daredevil Yellow and Spider-Man Blue?
Yeah, no, I found that his art in this one was a little bit more crisp.
Okay.
Compared to a Daredevil, that's the tonic speaking, stuttering, the Daredevil Yellow issue.
Okay.
I found it to be a little bit more clear. The lines were a little bit sharper for me.
Okay.
But again, I think his artwork, like I've said in the past, it complements the story that's in play.
Yeah.
So it was really, really well done. Lots of expressions, I find. Everything was in the eyes.
Okay.
Especially because, you know, yeah, you're reading where Gwen is coming from and Mary Jane. Like, Mary Jane has this very lustful look in her eyes, very flirtatious. Gwen has this also interest, but I didn't find it to be like dirty. It was more like she likes this guy and she just has she thinks he's cute. She wants to pursue something, but isn't sure how to do it. You know what I mean? How to go ahead with it. But that was very evident in his artwork.
Okay.
So I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah, the Gwen Stacy character seems as though she's looking more at Peter, who he is as a person,
mm-hmm.
and is attracted to that quality, his personality, the qualities of his character, whereas MJ is looking at. I mean, it's only shown or written this way at first. You get to learn a lot more about MJ later on down the line, but it's more she's looking at the surface mm-hmm. of this guy. So yeah, it's a very good that's a good observation. You could definitely see that in their facial description, their eyes. A lot of people who know Spider-Man from the animated series or from the movies, they always associate Mary Jane automatically because that's what they've been shown, right? Mm-hmm. She's the one that Spider-Man eventually marries. Right. Peter Parker eventually marries. But when you read this now, what are your impressions of Gwen? And now in the new Amazing Spider-Man movies, that's been the main character. Do you feel like it's a better fit for him? Or like, how do you view it? What's your point of view?
I think I've come to know firstly by the films, at least the latest films of Spider-Man, and this graphic novel that Gwen was his first love.
Yeah.
And it wasn't anything forced. She wasn't the obvious choice. Like, Mary Jane was very the life of the party. She was very obvious. She was the knockout. You know what I mean? But Gwen, it seemed that she was surrounded by a lot of male friends. There was Flash, there was Harry, there was Peter. But she was never, like, she never seemed to appear to play this game with any of these males. Like, she would set Flash straight when she had to. She didn't hold back. She didn't seem to be flirtatious, at least to me. She just seemed like she was just one of the guys.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes that's appealing to other guys, when you can feel comfortable being yourself with another girl.
Right.
And I think that's what makes it appealing.
Right.
To know someone like that.
And she was beautiful just the same.
Just the same.
Yeah.
But Mary Jane was more like, you know, wearing the skimpy stuff and the hair and the calling, you know, certain... I don't know. I didn't know where she was going. She seemed like such a floozy.
Yeah.
You know, she was calling Peter my guy. And then she's like, oh, I'm going to be going out with Harry. And then she's hanging out with this guy. Like, she was just such a...
There's no stability with her personality.
Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, I know that this was... I don't know much about her, but within this story, I wanted to shake her.
Yeah.
I was just like, stop.
A lot of people wanted to, at the time... They just felt that there was no substance to her.
Yeah.
At the time.
Yeah.
But as the character progresses, you come to know that it's all a self-defense mechanism because she had a very, very hard upbringing. So the way that she would portray herself was all self-defense and trying to hide the pain that she had gone through. But there was so much more there as a character. And her character really comes a little bit full circle once Gwen dies. And she's there for Peter to console him. And he references it in this book. I don't know if you caught that portion at the end of the book where he's tying off his conversation with Gwen. And he says, you know, the night that you died, MJ was there. And to put it bluntly, I was, you know, rude, very rude with her because I didn't want to hear her life is a party. Let's go and get over this. She actually shocked Peter because after he had done this outburst to him, she had closed the door where he had been like by himself and she just put his arm around him and sat with him. And it showed another layer to her character that would later...
What she was doing was just putting on a show?
Yeah, it showed that there was more to her. There was a lot of heart to her. She understood...
I guess...
It's something that's developed over the years. Like, yeah. It's not...
I'm not saying that people don't actually do that. I understand that people have defense mechanisms depending on what they've encountered in life. I do understand that. But it can... I don't know. I just feel like you don't necessarily have to go a certain route.
No. And that was
part of... You have choices. Everybody has a choice.
Yeah.
If you want to act like a floozy and like an airhead...
Yeah.
Then, you know what? You're giving a portrayal of yourself that isn't, and then you're throwing everybody else off...
Right.
...of the type of person that you are. And that's a shame.
Yeah. Right? And that's why her and Peter end up having the romance that they have, which is probably one of the best ones in all of comics, because you really get to see her true person, and Peter sees through it.
Well, if that's the case, then fine, but...
In this book, no, it doesn't come through.
Yeah.
It doesn't come through. Here I just wanted to smack her. Until the end of the book. Right?
And we're,
I don't want to jump to the end just yet. Let's start with the villains in it. What I like about Jeff Loeb and Tim Sale miniseries that they do, these special series of...
They managed to get a lot in without overwhelming the system.
Yeah.
Like, I found that too.
And how did you feel? Like, did you feel with these six issues that are pretty fast-paced... Did you feel like you were ever lost, or did you feel like you've gotten a good little handle, a good basis of Spider-Man's universe? I think you get it a bit more than the Daredevil one,
mm-hmm.
because there's, I think, five villains that I've listed, but major ones. You've got Green Goblin to start, which is Harry Osborn, which that relationship is like a Batman-Joker type of thing. Even maybe a little bit more depth to it, because mm-hmm. there's an actual relationship with family there.
Mm-hmm.
There's the Rhino, which is more of a action-packed, seeing how Spider-Man uses his abilities against powerhouses.
Mm-hmm.
Then you have the Lizard, which is another really good relationship between a mentor, mm-hmm. like a doctor. Excuse me.
Is Yoda coming out again?
Yoda's coming out now. The mentor with him and Kurt Connors, and that...
It would be, Yoda's coming out here.
Let's put Yoda away until we do a Star Wars episode.
But that's what he would have said. He would have said it in reverse.
Yeah. We're not going to do that. Because I don't know if you can handle it. I don't know if I can handle it right now. Getting back to Lizard. Kirk Connors. It's a heartbreaking story because here's a guy... I don't really like how they portrayed his story in the Amazing Spider-Man movie, because so much of what he's trying to do is to just be a complete man with both arms, so that he could be a father and a husband. And so if that's something in the movie that wasn't addressed, that he does have a family
mm-hmm.
that is going through this pain of not knowing whether he's stable,
right?
And he's not out to. He's not out to get everybody else initially. He just wants to... He doesn't want everyone else to become a lizard.
It's not about him. It's about making everyone else in his life. It's about doing it for the people
he loves. Yeah, he wants to heal himself for, you know, so he can feel whole again.
Yeah.
It's only when he's the Lizard, he's not... He doesn't even know that he is Kurt Connors. You notice that in this book?
Yeah.
Peter Parker or Spider-Man says, like, he doesn't even know that he's Kurt Connors. He just knows that Kurt Connors has the formula.
Yeah, and he hates him.
Yeah.
I think he said, right?
He just wants to get the formula and and it's fearful for his family to, mm-hmm. they come from Florida to visit him, yeah. hoping that he's stable now.
Which we should have been in Florida by now, but anyway,
that's another subject altogether. And then there's the vulture.
Yeah.
There's one who isn't the real vulture. The real vulture is the old man, Adrian Toomes, but there's somebody who wants his suit, his power. And that's another villain in this. And then it comes full circle with Kraven the Hunter. Have you ever heard of any of these characters?
Never. I didn't know about this Kraven guy. I just knew that there was someone within the Blue series. There was someone lurking in the background.
Yes.
And he was, you know, just seeing, knowing everything about Spider-Man and his secret, I guess, right?
Every issue, he's in the shadows.
Yeah.
And I didn't even remember who it was. I had read this before, and it was still a good surprise for me because I had forgotten that it was him. And what?
So, out of all the villains, I was like, I don't know who this guy is. I thought it was going to be someone, when he was revealed, someone that I was familiar with.
Okay.
But when I'm like, who's this guy?
Yeah. Kraven was a pretty early villain that Stan Lee and Steve Ditko had created, the creators of Spider-Man. But he had never really reached his full potential as a villain throughout his tenure in the Spider-Man books until there was a story written called Kraven's Last Hunt, which was a very psychological book. It was more his story. That's probably listed as the number one Spider-Man story.
Really?
Yeah. And so those issues that ran through the entire Spider-Man catalog at the time were really elevated his mythology. So to put him at the end of this book was kind of a cool touch.
Okay.
Because he had used all these villains that were listed, except for the Goblin, who was in issue number one. All of these villains that we listed so far were testing grounds for him to check out how Spider-Man would fight and how he would attack him, what would be the best way. And he had been hired to kill Spider-Man from the Goblin.
From Harry,
From Harry Norman Osborn. Yeah. So the story comes full circle. So I like that about this book. That whereas Daredevil Yellow, I hate to compare the two because they're both solid books, but Daredevil Yellow I felt were more individual issues that had a couple of things that connected them. But they all this one here had
more consistency.
It tied itself at the end.
Right.
Like, it tied the loop very well at the end.
Right.
So, Spider-Man's rogue gallery, it's comparable to Batman's in a lot of ways. What did you find? What's your take on Spider-Man's rogue gallery? What do you think of it? Especially to start off with him and Green Goblin. That relationship there. When you first, that first issue that you read about them and seeing how Green Goblin knows who Spider-Man is, and Peter Parker is acquaintances and eventually best friends with Harry Osborn.
Yeah, but they weren't really.
Not yet. This is kind of like the foundation of that friendship starting when they become roommates, right?
Yeah.
Like, it makes for compelling storytelling to know how close Peter Parker is to his enemies. Like, what did you find when reading that? What went through your head?
It felt sad for him. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because a lot of, like you said, in regards to Harry being his friend and his dad being, like, one of his top enemies, that's sad. Mm-hmm. Then the doctor, Dr.
Connors. Yep.
He's obviously, like mentioned before, he's a mentor. He's someone who he would discuss things with. They would solve problems together. Yeah, they would team up.
They defeated the Rhino. Yeah. Like, you know.
Exactly. Together. But then at the same time, so I think it's a lot of turmoil for Peter. Mm-hmm. An internal warfare that he has because all of these people the few people that he has confidence in are also the type of people that he has to keep at bay. So it's a little bit disheartening.
Yeah.
I mean, at least with those two villains. I don't think he has anything sentimental with the Vulture and the Rhino.
I don't know about the Rhino. I know with the Vulture, there was a story that I had read where he had been in very close contact with Aunt May and her senior citizen friends and had put them all at risk. So it always hits close to home.
Right.
These villains. Dr. Octopus at one time was dating Aunt May and was living in her boarding house.
That's messed up.
Yeah.
What?
Isn't that crazy? And that's the one thing about Spider-Man that I feel that his problems, not in Dr. Octopus dating Aunt May, is relatable, but his life is, I think, the most relatable of a superhero from this generation. From the, you know, the heroes that are 50 plus years old. I think he's even more relatable in some ways than Batman. Even though Batman's human, he could be shot and killed, but he's a billionaire. He kind of lives away from everybody else. His story.
Yeah, but riches and fame doesn't protect you from the things that doesn't protect you from death. It doesn't make you immune to pain. You have more to lose when you have that type of stuff. That type of security, it's not real security.
But would you agree though that Bruce Wayne, just as a man, Batman as a character, is a little bit more detached from certain things than a Spider-Man or Peter Parker would be? Peter Parker has to worry about bills. Peter Parker has to get to school on time. Like, his problems are more of a common man problem. Whereas somebody like Batman, who, yes, we can relate to things that him being a human and not having superpowers. So we always say, like, yeah, you know what? If I train hard enough and if I had millions of dollars, I could be a superhero, which is what we relate to about him. But with Spider-Man, he is a guy who's just trying to pass school. He's a guy who's working out relationships with his friends. He's a guy who is trying to make ends meet. And oftentimes he's not. He doesn't live in no lap of luxury. He doesn't have the luxury of a Tony Stark or Batman who can have an endless amount of financial aid to do whatever it is that he wants to do.
I agree with what you're saying, but to a certain extent. Like I said, when people have all these luxurious homes and cars and they think that they have this blanket of security, you have much more to lose than I do.
Absolutely.
At the end of the day, when the stock market hits,
no, absolutely,
you're gonna be coming down like you're a burning building,
right?
So I think everybody at the end of the day, no matter what kind of background you have, we all face the same problems. Whether you're a little bit more well off than I am, I also think too there's differences because Peter is a teenager, Bruce is a full grown man who runs a company, mm-hmm. and. Really doesn't run it, but
yeah,
it's different paths of life that they both lead.
Right. I'm just saying in comparison to all superhero characters, the day to day life that Peter Parker has to lead as a just trying to make it in life is more.
I think
relatable.
It depends on the reader because there might be some Joe Schmo out there that has millions and he does the exact same thing that we do. He probably has a serious Batcave situation with Christian Bale's Batman suit. You know what I mean? Like they probably went all out and they have all this nice stuff and they probably feel that they can relate to Bruce Wayne because they have all of these things.
So you don't think that the majority of people are more on Peter Parker's level? Like, you take the average person in the United States or Canada, and you don't think that they're more blue-collar people just trying to get by in life? I think there's a lot more than the 1% that are billionaires. You know what I mean?
I'm not saying that. I'm saying that I think, just like there's people that are relatable to Parker, I think there's people relatable to Mr. Wayne.
Okay, fair enough.
Is why, when these stories are written, that's why they, you know, anybody can laugh at Nerd Nation and make fun of the fact that we have conversations about these topics. But at the end of the day, people write about these things because they actually happen. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. To people of low class, middle class, high class. At the end of the day, everybody has something to relate to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's true. We all find that character that in some way or shape we can find a relation to.
Does that make sense? Did it answer your question?
Yeah, absolutely. What do you think of Aunt May reading this?
She's so fragile.
Yeah.
She's so weak.
Yeah.
She should have been dead a long time ago.
Everybody says that. That's why I wanted to hear what you would say. Because she's this character that is... She's a loving, very loving character. And you can see why Peter is so bent on protecting her, and they're so attached to each other because he doesn't have his parents anymore. He doesn't, at this point in the timeline of when this book is written, he doesn't know where they went, what happened to them. Mm-hmm. And he's lost his Uncle Ben. So he feels like Aunt May and Peter, they're the only ones.
They only have each other.
And it's a really beautiful relationship. Mm-hmm. But then at some point in time, as you continue reading Spider-Man, you're kind of like, okay, this lady needs to die. And
sounds terrible.
It is terrible, but it's a sentiment that everybody shares for a fictional character.
People don't feel that way about Alfred, though, do they?
No, I don't think anybody wants Alfred to die. Because
I've never come across anyone feeling that way about
Sir Alfred. But see, the difference with the way somebody like an Alfred is written is that he doesn't hold back from what Bruce Wayne has to do. He's more of a person who's like, you wish that Bruce Wayne listened to Alfred a little more.
Yeah.
And in the case of Spider-Man stories, at this stage of the game, when this book is taking place in the Spider-Man timeline, because it's taking place in early in his life when he's just, you know, he's graduated high school and he's moving out on his own, you see where Aunt May still has a place. It's mm-hmm. a very nice relationship, a place for him to come back home to. Mm-hmm. But it becomes something that holds him back mm-hmm. as the years go on. And even recently, not too long ago, maybe 8 years ago, they tried to relaunch Spider-Man's line mm-hmm. so that they could tell stories like this one again, where he's young and single and unattached and hanging with his friends. Like, Peter Parker's not married, because the people at Marvel would say, you know, a married Spider-Man after a while becomes boring. We don't want him to be with Mary Jane. So they did this storyline where Aunt May's life was on the line, and he had to literally make a deal with the devil to sacrifice his marriage in order to keep Aunt May alive.
I remember you told me about that.
And it's just like, at this point in time, that's a ridiculous plot, because this lady should be like 100 something. She should have been in the dust a long time ago. Yeah, so it's when they start keeping her around it's just, at some point, she's got to go.
Yeah.
It sounds horrible to say, but it's true.
I mean, unless they made her younger than what she is in the story. But and like, I think she's very, very elderly.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And she's been elderly for way too long for them to keep telling the stories the way they are.
Yeah. I think the relationship that they have, though, is very, very sweet.
It's so sweet.
Yeah. It's adorable. They know when something's up, and they know when to address certain things. They're both, although they're very open with each other, it's almost like they just don't want to step on each other's toes. She recognizes that he's a growing man.
Yeah.
He's not a little boy anymore.
Yeah.
You know, who perhaps wants his own space, wants to start looking into expanding or just has different goals, perhaps. He doesn't want to stay home and take care of his elderly aunt. She must recognize that.
Yeah, she's extremely important in the development of Peter Parker as an adult and what he becomes as a hero. I think I always think it's good to have that touchstone that that a character can go back to.
Mm-hmm. Which parent is probably why they won't kill her off then.
Right, but at this point, the cool thing about Marvel, which is shown in this book, is that the characters grow. The characters move on. You know, Gwen Stacy died. That was the first major protagonist character in all of comics to die and to stay dead for a long time.
Why did they kill her off? Just to make it interesting, or like, what was the reason?
Well,
I know with Jason Todd,
yeah,
they killed him off because he was a bit of a douche,
right?
And they gave the audience or the readers an opportunity to voice in to either keep him alive or to kill him off. But what was the reason? Was it not having, because I don't know the background really. Was the story with Gwen not really going anywhere?
It's interesting that you mentioned that. It's a good point to bring up, especially in discussing a book that revolves around Peter talking to Gwen. Mm-hmm. Jerry Conway was the writer. He was a really young kid, actually, when he got on to the Spider-Man book and was able to work full-time on it. And he was one of the first guys after Stan Lee to really make an impact on Spider-Man's universe, on the canon. And he had just said that Gwen Stacy was a bore as a character. She became more interesting in death.
Really?
Yeah, she was a little bit of like, the way you would say Mary Jane was kind of, you know, flirtatious and bore, or flirtatious and a party animal, and was just like this guy to that guy. Gwen Stacy was very much like, she hated Peter, or she loved Peter, hated Spider-Man, because...
Yeah, but I think that to me, right in this moment, that sounds interesting.
It is interesting, but she was kind of, I don't want to say a prude, but she was this goody-goody girl that Stan Lee had created because that's what he liked. He mimicked, he created her based on the woman he would eventually marry. So Stan Lee based Gwen Stacy on what he liked in a girl. But for the younger audience, and for Peter Parker at the age that he was at, the Jerry Conway had said, and I heard him in an interview say this, Mary Jane is the girl we all wanted to date. Mary Jane is the more interesting one. So, and Gwen Stacy was pretty boring, to be honest. She would just get upset about things and not want to talk to Peter, and it was just kind of...
So she was like every other girl.
Yeah, but...
So?
But
that's realistic.
But in the stories, her character just wasn't developing. They just didn't enjoy writing her. So he wanted to shake up Spider-Man's world, and how would he do this? How could he make her life mean something more? So the best way to do that was to kill her off. And I don't think Stan Lee wanted to do that at the time, but when he got the okay, when Jerry Conway got the okay, I don't think Stan Lee was around to say, no, don't do it. Mm-hmm. But
how did the Stan Lee react to that?
Well, I think initially I think his real reaction was that he was upset about it, but he'll now say how, it was exciting to see something like this happen in the comic books, and I wouldn't have done it, but, you know,
good. You have his, like, deflection. So he wasn't all happy about it, but after a while he picked up that it was a good idea.
And her character has meaning now because of the death. Her character wouldn't have meant anything, really. She was a bore. Hmm. She became more interesting afterwards. And that's probably one of the most important issues in all of comic books. And what makes it interesting is that, one, the Green Goblin is to blame for it. Mm-hmm. But what really kills her is that Spider-Man snaps her neck trying to save her. No, Spider-Man he blames himself in a way. And that eats at him forever.
Right. Because he doesn't know. That's right. He doesn't know if him saving her is what killed her.
Yeah.
Or if it was what
the fall.
The fall. Yeah.
And that's a scene.
That's good writing, though.
Yeah. He did a really good job. Jerry Conway did an excellent job at setting all of that up.
Yeah.
So it's something that comes back constantly in the Spider-Man universe, where he's longing for Gwen and this pain and this void in his life. Mm-hmm. Would you have preferred him to end up with Gwen? Or with Mary Jane? With what you've read here.
From what I read here, I would have preferred him to go with Gwen.
Yeah.
And the fact that she dies, it pulls at the heartstrings.
Yeah.
It's sad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I couldn't remember, but the reason why this book was called Spider-Man Blue was the way Peter is feeling.
Feeling, yeah.
I thought it maybe had some association to do with the costume, the way Daredevil Yellow had to do with it. Mm-hmm. But that also had to be with playing with the fear concept, right? Mm-hmm. So, at the end of this book, you realize that talking to Gwen, he's saying...
He's just sad.
Yeah, he's still sad about this.
Yeah.
Do you if you were Mary Jane, and this was your husband, and he still had this pain over a lost love, how would you feel?
I thought about that. The second I put it down and I was recalling that, I don't know. It's a very hard question to answer. For me, I don't think I could ever get over the loss of my spouse.
Yeah.
I don't think I would have been able to move on.
Right.
So much as to then go and marry.
Right.
Some next person who played this game in front of this other person. it was such drama.
Right.
It was such teenage drama. And then after everything that you experience with this person, to then just... I mean, I know there's that five step of, you know, denial, acceptance, and then blah, blah, blah. I don't know what's in between. And then, and then you eventually get over it. Now, that doesn't mean that you stop loving the person.
Right.
But you do eventually move on, and there's nothing wrong with that.
Right.
But for myself personally, I don't know if I could ever do that. I don't know if I could just if something were to happen to you, you know, years go on and then I just move on to someone else. At the end of the day, though, we're meant to be with people. We're meant to be with people. We don't want to be alone.
How would you feel, though, if you were Mary Jane? Let's think for a second, like, hypothetically. If I was Peter Parker and you were Mary Jane in this situation and you heard me privately talking to my ex-girlfriend that had died, that I never...
Would it would have snapped your neck.
You would have been pissed off.
But this is what I'm saying. It sounds very cruel, and I've never, thankfully, have had to deal with anything like that. But it sounds very insensitive to say that. But I'm the person in your life now. So I'll be there to console you. If you want to talk about it, talk to me. Don't go off by yourself and have this relationship on your own mm-hmm. with this person, whether they're here, whether they're not. I'm here. I'm your friend.
Right.
I'm your one and only at this time. We are supposed to be a partnership. So if you have these feelings of sorrow and of pain, then talk to me about it. And I'll walk you through it. I'll support you through it. But if you are isolating this relationship with this person over there, that's going to take me off a little bit.
Yeah.
I think. But I think the way Mary Jane handled it at the end, it was very classy. Yeah. It was very opposite of what she was, how she was written throughout the book. Story,
yeah.
I applauded it, but I know I wouldn't have done it. I'd be like, what are you doing?
The other thing, too, is that this was a person Mary Jane had also grown up with. And she had been her friends with, too, right? So yeah. She knew how that person felt for Peter. And she knew that at the time, perhaps, if Mary Jane had been a different type of person in Peter's life, she may have still been that girl instead of being that party animal, right? So in the way their relationship eventually pans out, their marriage, their bond is like Peter Parker and Mary Jane. It's not, they're not married anymore in the comics because they changed it, but it's one of those relationships that you think even if Gwen Stacy would come back to life, Mary Jane and Peter Parker is the relationship. That's the person he should be with because of the loyalty, the support, the understanding that she has for him. And it's later...
Yeah, but I don't think that's fair for Gwen, right? Because they've spent so many years developing this relationship. That's all people know.
Right.
So they have nothing else to compare it to. So yeah. I think that's a little bit unfair for the Gwen.
Well, yeah, it's unfair that she died and wasn't able to see the full potential of their relationship, but... The way that things pan out for Peter Parker, when he does end up with Mary Jane, you realize that she is the right one for him. It's just, I think, a therapeutic thing for him to do to talk to her, to get over these emotions.
But then that's why I'm there.
Right.
And doesn't it say? In sickness and health and this and that and... You know, I'm the person. I'm supposed to be there for you, whether it's good or bad. I'm not saying what he did was terrible and it was like cheating or anything, but I think at the end of the day, any wife would have a bit of an issue if you walk into a part of, if I go into a part of my home and find that my husband is having this deep emotional, I don't know, something with this other person. It's like clearly... You have an emotion. You still have an emotional. And sometimes, maybe, having an affair is a bad thing.
Okay?
I'm going there. Having an affair is a bad thing, obviously. However, I think it's even, maybe, because it's never happened to me, but I think what makes it even harder is when either a husband or a wife finds that there's an emotional attachment. If it's a physical thing, it doesn't make it okay. But I think what makes it even harder to overcome that distrust or that situation is now when you find out that this person is actually cared for by the person who apparently loves you.
Right.
I think that makes it even harder.
Absolutely.
Because now there's this emotional, sentimental thing.
Yeah.
Rather than, it's like, yo, I screwed up. It was a moment of weakness and I did what I did.
Right.
But I think what makes it even harder to swallow or harder to accept or harder to overcome is the fact that, oh, wait a minute, this person, there is something there.
But in this case...
So that's what I think that, you know, makes it hard to...
Yeah, but in this case, it's a little different in the sense that this person, the reason why they're apart wasn't any reason of disloyalty or trust. It's that this person was stolen from the person.
Yes.
And without having been married, he's a widow. So the person's not really a threat to their relationship, but it's something that he's always going to deal with this pain, right? It's like if you...
I know, but how would you feel then if I had someone, or let's not make it about us, but but if you know, if you knew of someone who... How would you feel if you were that person walking in and hearing that your beloved is disclosing all of these feelings of guilt and these desires that he had, that she had for this guy, and she feels so sorry for having missed out on opportunities of being with her and or being with him, and you know, she should have said this to him, and had she done this, maybe this would have been different. It's almost like she's regretting the life that she chose to have with you.
I think, though, that's...
Am I being too dramatic?
No, I think it's a fair question. That's why I brought it up. I think that in this case, with Mary Jane and Peter Parker, she knew that that was there. So that's something that she's going to... It's like knowing this is where the person comes from.
She knew
from.
What she was getting herself
yeah.
into.
It's like if you marry someone who's a widower or a widow, you're going to have to accept the fact that there was another person there. And if you don't want to deal with that, if you don't want to deal with that person's previous life or love, don't marry them. Because that's something you're going to have to deal with in some respect. Now, like I said, Peter would never trade in Mary Jane. He says that to Gwen too. Like, this is the person who became my wife. And she's...
Yeah, but even when he was talking to her, it was almost like he was apologetic about it. He's like, "When? Well, this is, well, you know, this is not what I mean. Don't take it this way."
No.
It was almost like he was sorry about it.
No. Yeah, maybe. But he says, like, listen, she would become my wife. I had to learn to love again. And she taught me how. Like, she's the person who made me a person again. So nobody will take that place of Mary Jane, because she's the one who made Peter Parker a full human.
I'm not saying
again.
You can't move on with your life. I'm just saying that situation right there where she walked in and heard that he was having this open confession of how he felt about everything. I mean,
it'd be hard to hear.
Perhaps.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, you know, your spouse is also your best friend. So I would hope that those feelings that you have conjured up inside of you are something that you would share with me, whether it's something I want to hear or not. You're my homie, so I'm going to want to hear what you have to say, and I'm going to try to help you through it. But like I said, I think the problem with this is that it was so secluded. It was so separate. It was almost like he was having his own relationship in the attic in private.
Right.
Like, you want to have those feelings. You went through this. I know your secret. I know everything about you. Let me in on this thing, too.
Yeah.
And let me help you through it.
Yeah.
I mean, that's my only thing about it.
Okay, fair enough. Well, good thing for me is you're my Gwen Stacy, and I won't have another Mary Jane, even if something happens to you.
You trying to say I'm not hot like Mary Jane?
Well, Gwen Stacy's hot. You're hotter than Mary Jane.
Yeah, but Mary Jane was the hot trotty, like, everyone's like, who's that?
Right, but I said I'm not going to have a Mary Jane because I have my Gwen Stacy. It's a compliment to you. Take it. That gin and tonic. Get out of your head and hear what I'm saying. Okay. There's something else I wanted to address in this book. How about the other cast of friends that Peter Parker has? What do you think of Flash Thompson, Harry Osborn?
Oh, I did not like Flash. I don't like him. He's such a bully.
And he was Peter's bully through high school.
He's such a bully. And I don't understand why they would write him in as a part of, like, the circle of friends. Like, he's just so, so terrible. But I thought it was very interesting how he is such a fan of Spider-Man.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, like, if that's your hero, then you should act like him. You should want to imitate him and not discriminate and not be a bully.
And that's what changes Flash Thompson later on. And that's what's cool about this, is that this book deals with all of the things, major things in Peter Parker's life, major characters, all of his circle of friends, Aunt May, Jameson is there, Osborn's there, and it shows you where they come from. Because if you're currently reading Spider-Man now, you'll see how much they've developed. Like, Flash Thompson becomes one of his best friends in life. even though they have that history, which is a really cool thing to see where it came from.
Yeah.
And I love seeing how...
It's almost like a lot of his enemies are also his friends.
Yeah. Yeah. He's... Spider-Man is such
that a... That has to mess with you some way,
absolutely.
Somehow.
Absolutely. And that's what makes... See, Spider-Man isn't... I don't think he has those story arcs the way some other characters do that are, you know, top 10 lists. But his overall canon of comic books, I think, is probably the strongest. He's got some of the most pivotal moments in single issues, first appearances, like most important things happen. But he never has like that 12-issue book that's like, you have to read this, it'll change your life, kind of like a Dark Knight Returns or something like that. But his entire cast of characters, the world he lives in, his interaction with people, there's nothing that compares to it. Mm-hmm. And part of what makes him so successful is all of these things. His job, his friends, his enemies. And you notice something interesting about his enemies, except for the Green Goblin, they're all animal related.
Oh, like him.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Isn't that cool? Yeah, yeah.
That's a cool. And or they're a hunter, like Kraven the Hunter. Mm-hmm. But so many of his villains are based off of other animals too. I don't know if that was a conscious effort that they did that, but I like that about
him. Good observation.
Yeah. The artwork in this, you had mentioned it being more crisp, Tim Sale's work. Mm-hmm. One thing that I, if you've read Spider-Man a lot or are familiar with him, there's many scenes in here that are famous Spider-Man scenes, such as the Mary Jane being at the door saying, "Face the tiger, you hit the jackpot." Mm-hmm. That's one of like the most famous scenes out of a Spider-Man book, the first time he meets her.
Oh, okay.
So he recreated a lot of famous moments. Did you see that part where he rescues Flash Thompson, and he's swinging through the city?
At the top of the building?
Yeah. Let me see the... It's exact picture of Amazing Fantasy 15.
I'm not familiar with that.
That's the first issue of Spider-Man ever, like his first appearance.
Oh, okay.
And he's in that exact same pose. So there's a lot of moments in this book where Tim Sale had to go back and he recreated some really great moments.
So almost as giving like homage?
Yeah. Yeah. And I found that it was most inspired by John Romita Sr., who was one of the main Spider-Man artists after Steve Ditko left the book, who was the creator of Spider-Man with Stan Lee. Mm-hmm. John Romita, if you see any classic Spider-Man pictures, it's probably a John Romita like that there. There's the first Mary Jane. He was a romance artist for comic books. So once he got onto the Spider-Man book, everyone became good looking.
Okay.
Spider-Man was no longer a scrawny, puny, ugly kid. Mm-hmm. The way Steve Ditko kind of drew them. He made his characters kind of ugly. Yeah, they were all beautiful. It became more of a soap opera book. Very romantic. Mary Jane was beautiful.
This is what this is. It's soap opera for guys, I think.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So you look at how he draws Gwen Stacy, Mary Jane in the back of the book.
Very sultry.
Yes, exactly. Peter Parker was now a handsome, good-looking guy. So I found that...
Oh, look, he's at the Washington Park. Spider-Man.
Yeah, no, yeah, exactly. So he took a lot of those beats from John Romita Sr. Mm-hmm. And kind of, I found that's how the angle he took the art for this book from.
Yeah.
He tried to pay homage to John Romita's stuff. And John Romita actually writes the intro at the beginning of this. Mm-hmm. And the first thing he did was look at all the art, because he was the art director for Marvel for many years. So his way of reading a comic book was not reading it.
Let me see how the
art tells a story.
Right.
And his son, John Romita Jr., is now probably the definitive Spider-Man artist along with his dad. He's probably drawn Spider-Man more than anybody.
How cool is that?
Yeah, it's really cool. So father and son both had a huge, huge influence on this character. And I love John Romita Spider-Man. It's my favorite. So... this book is a winner for you. Would you read Spider-Man again based off of your intro from Spider-Man Blue?
Based on this, I would give it another shot.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Who's your favorite villain?
I think it was the Lizard.
Yeah?
Actually. Yeah. Okay. I felt a little bit more like a sentimental thing for him. I felt bad for him.
Okay.
The fact that the relationship between him and his wife, it was one of just very faithful. Okay. You know, she knew his situation. Yeah. She knew what the problem was. And despite the what they were facing, she didn't leave his side. I mean, yes, they lived in different states and stuff, but probably for the sake of their child.
Yeah.
But she almost as if she never wanted to give up on him.
Right.
And was very grateful that Spider-Man was there to be the support that she couldn't physically be at that time. But she just never lost faith in her relationship with her husband, because she knew who he really was, knew what he was capable of.
He's a good man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And when you read about him, like, he really is a good person with good intentions, but it just so happens that things go wrong for him.
Yeah.
And when you find out, obviously, that they have a child together, like, you know, it gets to Spider-Man. He's like, I can't let the boy see his father like this, kind of thing. Or when they come and see Dr. Connors, when the lab is all destroyed and Spider-Man's there, he's like, okay, just one second. We were doing something and it kind of made a mess. Just one second. And then he just doesn't want to allow this ideal portrayal of this father and husband to be tainted by this terrible lizard. Like, he's protecting that.
Yeah.
So that one actually...
A lot of the Spider-Man stories have that put him in a tough spot, mm-hmm. where he's, for instance, with the Lizard, Kurt Connors is his friend and someone he goes to for help, mm-hmm. but then a lot of times he's got to be fighting him, mm-hmm. to protect the city, and the whole while he's remembering, like, this is my friend, mm-hmm. that I have to protect,
yeah.
as I beat him up,
yeah.
in order to let him go home to his family.
Yeah.
Or Norman Osborn, this is my best friend's father.
Yeah, but he's
a psycho.
Yeah,
if like, Norman Osborn, I think, is more... Joker is the number one villain in comic books of all time, most recognizable. But I think that for a rogues gallery, nobody has been more hell-bent on ruining their enemy's life the way Norman Osborn is with Spider-Man.
Yeah, that guy's on a mission.
Yeah.
And I don't think he even realizes that. That's
exactly,
how twisted
exactly.
he is. Like, he's just so messed up.
They've overused him a lot in the Spider-Man stories, but it's hard not to when you can, there's so much history there.
Mm-hmm.
But I like the pacing of this book. I like that they had numerous villains. They included all of the friends, the cast,
mm-hmm.
and I think it's a great jumping on point for anyone who wants to get into Spider-Man and they want like a little introduction. I think it's a good way to do it.
Yeah, I liked it. I enjoyed it. I thought it was, like you said, it had a lot of villains, a lot of characters, friendships, a lot of relationship developments, but it didn't seem to me overwhelming.
Okay.
I think it was a nice pace. It was very consistent, very clean. I didn't feel like there was a lot of backtracking. It was just a nice flow.
Would you read some older Spider-Man if I handed it to you?
Probably not.
No.
I'll tell you, it is? It's just, I don't like the feel of the paper. And like the art, like I don't like the pixelated.
Oh no, I wouldn't, I'd give it like to if, you in the all remastered versions where it's not,
okay,
doesn't look like that.
Okay, then that's where
I
would do it. But like the single issues where it's like,
what I'm saying is, do you like this world that he lives in with these...
This one, yes.
Okay.
This one, it's cool.
I suggested Ultimate Spider-Man to you once, and you couldn't get through the first one. But that you had your DC blinders on at the time.
Yeah, I'm kind
Maybe
of...
Maybe it'd be different now.
I'm broadening a little bit.
Yeah.
My horizons.
Wow. 3 Marvel books in a row.
In a span of 2 weeks, I think.
And then we're going to go on
Less
to the
than
fourth.
That.
You're going to do the Hulk. I am impressed. Handshake. Daphne J. Awesome stuff. So we'll wrap it up there. It's been a lot of fun. Is there anything you want to say, include at the end that we're forgetting?
Not that I know of.
No?
No.
Okay, cool. What would you grade this book? I didn't get your grading. You gave Daredevil Yellow 7.5. What would you do with this one? Same?
I would probably do 7.5.
Again?
Yeah.
I'd give this one a bit more. I'd give it an 8 to 8.5. I really like this book. It's awesome. All right. So 7.5 is your final answer? Yeah. Because last time you changed it 10 times.
No, see, he had like 6 tapes talking to her. Is that how many issues there was?
Yeah.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah. Good observation.
Look, and see, and then he has these pictures of, yeah, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, but you can't blame him for being...
I'm not blaming him. Like especially then when you find out why the choice of color. I mean, he's having a sad day. I think it was the anniversary.
It was Valentine's Day, I think.
Right, when she asked him to be his Valentine.
Yeah.
And it was that when they basically established that they were going to be an item.
Yes. Yeah. So, in this book, yeah.
It's a sad story.
See, what I like about Peter Parker is that unlike other characters who have lost in their life, like every superhero seems to have lost a parent. In his case, he lost Uncle Ben. You know, Daredevil loses his dad. Batman loses his parents. Yada, 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 et cetera, et cetera. But in his case, there's so much more responsibility on his plate because in the case of Uncle Ben, he could have prevented it.
Yeah.
He feels he could have done something to help Gwen. So I think for Peter Parker, Spider-Man, there's so much more. He takes his responsibility with his great power. Comes great responsibility. He takes it so serious. And it constantly is the driving force, the motivation for him being a hero. And I love when they, you know, they constantly address that, but I love that aspect of the character.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Spider-Man Blue, we recommend it. I'm happy you're enjoying the Marvel Universe.
Thank you for recommending it.
That's awesome. So we'll wrap it up there. Contact us at caveofsolitude@outlook.com. The website is up and running nice and smooth, and it's looking prettier and prettier all the time. You can follow us on Instagram as well. Anything I'm leaving out? Leave us an iTunes review, please. If you're one of our friends and you listen to the show, like, I don't know, Philly P, Little Sparrow, leave us an iTunes review. It helps get the word out there. Other than that, thank you for listening. We will be heading to New York very shortly. Maybe we'll do an episode there.
Maybe.
Hopefully, that'd be cool. All right, guys. Talk to you later.
Ciao.